So for the details of the matters we have on hand this afternoon on the pause as we prepare to have another exciting weekend. But the public spat between the PURC and the Electricity Company of Ghana is very far from over. Now, lawyers representing board members of the Electricity Company of Ghana has challenged a nearly 6 million cedis fine imposed by the Public Utility Regulatory Commission, calling the directive unlawful beyond jurisdiction. The PURC imposed a fine on ECG board members who served between January 1 and March 18, 2024, totaling some 5.868 million Ghana cedis due to violation of Regulation 39 of LI 42413. This regulation requires prior notification to consumers for any power interruption. The lawyers representing the implicated board members is now pushing back against the penalty. Member of our legal desk, Kwaku Asante, joins me in studio with details of this board directive. We also have another response from the Electricity Company of Ghana, signed by the Managing Director, Samuel Dobek Mahama. And of course, head of our energy desk, Kwajobe, is also here. As I walk you through the response, first from the perspective of the board and, of course, the management of the Electricity Company of Ghana. So, Kwaku, you're welcome. Please, welcome to.
Thank you also.
So, a strongly worded statement, first from the lawyer, on behalf of all the board members of the ECG. Let's walk through details of what the board is communicating, their response to the PURC.
Well, Elton, it's a five-pager document from lawyers of the board members of the ECG, SK Boafo and Co. And SK Boafo Achampong is the president of the Ghana Bar Association,
right,
as we know now, the national president. So they start first by laying out the premise, quoting directly from the letter that PURC put into the public domain and which was also directed at the Electricity Company of Ghana. They talk about the specifics of the fine that have been imposed on them, and then they go ahead to do their own analysis in terms of the legal position. So let me read this part. It says, the commission is a creator of statutes. We can only act within the remit of the law. As a creator of statutes, the commission must confine itself strictly within the powers, rights, and jurisdiction granted to it by the statute or its enabling instruments in assuming with jurisdiction or exercising the power authority thereof. The commission cannot go beyond what is conferred on it by law or try to read into something which is not there. The commission's power to impose regulatory charges on the Public Utility Commission is provided for in an enabling law, they stated, and they say that it is patently clear that under the said provision, the commission, that is PURC, can only impose a regulatory charge on a utility, on a public utility. The commission does not have the power or authority to purport to impose any regulatory charge on officers of the public utility. The commission, in purporting to impose the said regulatory charges on the board members, clearly exceeded their jurisdiction as it is not within their powers or authority to do so. It must also be stated that the Electricity Company of Ghana Limited, as a corporate body, has a distinct legal personality that is separate from that of the board members. This is the very foundation of company law, that the officers of the company cannot be held liable for the acts of the company. And lifting the veil of incorporation to go after the officers of the company can only be done in exceptional cases and only done by a court of competent jurisdiction. The commission's lack of jurisdiction, power, and authority to lift the veil of the incorporation in this matter, and they go ahead to state some of these offenses and other things that they do. So then they continue to conclude that, as stated above, under Section 38 of Act 5328, a default on the part of a public utility in the payment of a penalty.
Before you bring us a conclusion, maybe we can restate the offenses and penalties.
Yes.
And again, there talks about failure to comply with the required standard of performance in the provision of utility service, refusal to provide its utility service
contrary
to Section 15, charges or demands for its service were not approved by the board contrary to Section 18, charges or demands higher a rate than approved by the board, failure to submit within a specified period a tariff of its rates also against the law, failing to submit new or revised of any existing rate for approval by the commission, failure to provide bill to its consumers, contrary to Section 26, failure to refuse to make the requisite adjustment arising out of a variation in rate, and then refuse to answer a question relevant to matter, which is a subject of investigation before the commission, failure to furnish the board for the purpose of performance of its actions required to be furnished by this act, and finally, failure to repair and submit to the commission within a specified period or under this act a return of information.
So the lawyers clearly say that it is these offences that will give rise to the imposition of any fine, failure which they will be liable to a term of imprisonment not exceeding 2 years. So they make the legal analysis that the purported imposition of the fine does not even fall within any of the body of offences that have been listed here. They go ahead to talk about offences of body of persons that will give rise to a liable in payment of compensation for damage, among other things. And then they go ahead to conclude thereof that because of this, the EC is unable to pay this. The ECG board officials are unable to accept this request. And they say that board members of the ECG are not responsible for the day-to-day administration of the ECG and therefore are not principal officers within the intendment of Act 538 to be able to be held liable for a default on the part of the public utility ECG. The Commission's order imposing regulatory charges on the board members of the board is unlawful, null and void, as same is without jurisdiction. By this order, the Commission has unlawfully clothed itself with the powers of a High Court and imposed a sentence on the board members without having given the opportunity to be heard, which amounts to a breach of the rules of natural justice. Our clients therefore reject the contents of the regulatory order relative to any personal liability on their part, and they pray that the Commission takes notice of the contents of this letter and act accordingly. Signed, Yao Champo Abafo, the lawyer for the board members of the ECG, from 1st August 2023 to 18th March.
So if I understand this carefully, you cannot impose fines on individuals.
Yes.
You can only do so, you can impose such fines on the entity.
Yes.
And not the individual, because the individuals are working on behalf of the entity.
And also,
that's the crux of it.
And also, they are what they call the principal officers. Those are persons who are engaged in the day-to-day running. And they even have specific offences for which reason you can impose a charge on them. They list some of those offences, which does not include a failure to publish a load shedding timetable, which is the basis for which the Electricity Company of Ghana is the subject of this dispute with PURC. So the general point that Yao Champo Bafu makes in this letter is that the board members do not run ECG directly. They are in charge of policy. And that if the ECG is supposed to be subject to any said payment, that the company will have to deal with it itself. And it's not a board which is not in charge of the day-to-day administration. And even if what is known in company law as lifting the corporate veil, as was put out in Salmon v. Salmon, it's only a court of competent jurisdiction that can pierce the veil, and it's not PURC. And so PURC, by ECG's board members' lawyers' contention, is overreaching its bounds.
We'll speak to your lawyer to understand what really this is about and whether or not the PURC has any grounds to stand on. Remember, there's been a precedent. When the Munchi 3 matter came up. The judgment was that board members cannot escape blame when there are excesses.
Yes.
And we'll see whether this fits into this category.
Yeah.
But let me also bring in Kojo Bray, head of our energy desk. Kojo,
yeah.
Apart from the lawyer writing to PURC on behalf of the board members of ECG, ECG has on its own responded to PURC.
Yeah.
And in the response, they've addressed all the issues that were highlighted by the PURC. Yeah. Walk us through them.
So what ECG is trying to do is to tell PURC that you should have given us a fair hearing because that's what natural law demands. Again, they are saying that ECG, PRC is behaving as though ECG never complied with their orders at all. And they are accusing PRC of overstepping their bounds, especially when it comes to the cash water flow mechanism.
So when they say that there was a complete breach of rules of natural justice, what explanation are they preferring to back this?
So here they say that, and I'm going to quote from this. It is submitted that orders contained in the decision of PRC being in the form of sanctions against ECG and its board of directors, the commission ought to have given ECG a fair hearing on the alleged breaches of the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission Act 1997, Act 538, and the Consumer Service Regulation 2020, LI 2413. The sanctions which were issued after request or specific report from ECG by PRC cannot, under any circumstance, be construed as having given ECG a fair hearing. It is further submitted that these reports were not submitted to PRC in response to allegations or charges against it, but pursuant to PRC's demand of same, which with this report, I mean, which which demand or request is not unusual? Okay. Now, it says it is the belief of ECG that when the Commission had issues with this report in the light of ECG's duties and obligations under the PRC Act and regulations, it was imperative that the performance of its administrative role as a public institution, PRC, PRC ought to have followed due administrative procedure by laying the appropriate charges against ECG for it to appear before it and show cause why sanctions should not be, imposed against it.
And based on that, they think that, PRC did not exhaust
they didn't do
this rules of natural justice.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be bringing in Mr. Martin Pilby shortly, but if you can quickly run us through some of the other issues.
Okay.
On the cash waterfall mechanism, made the point that we take the view that the cash waterfall mechanism is not subject to any regulatory oversight that they've made. Mm-hmm. There was also the failure to submit monthly bank statement, notification of public on planned outages.
Mm-hmm.
Run us through that particular aspect on the planned outage, which is a matter that everybody is concerned with.
Okay.
You ordinarily going to want to understand what is going on.
Mm.
ECG has a response to PRC.
Yeah. The ECG says, Regulation 45 of LI 2413, that the PRC relies upon to impose the regulatory charge ought to be interpreted reasonably as mandated by Article 23 of the 1992 Constitution. It is rather arbitrary for PRC to have proceeded to impose sanctions when it has drawn its own conclusions without hearing ECG. More worrying is the fact that the PRC proceeds suo motu to impose sanctions per alleged incident of infraction rather than dealing with the incident as a composite matter. This approach obviously provides PRC the avenue to exact outrageous sums against ECG, which is clearly at odds with an administrative body's constitutional duty to be reasonable. This unreasonableness is further manifested when considers how self-serving it is for PRC to wait and seek to obtain funds for itself under the guise of regulatory charges based on number of incidents. Further proof of the unreasonableness of PRC is expressed in its order directed at Board of Directors of ECG to pay the said regulatory charge on ECG's behalf. This decision is neither grounded on the fact that the Commission found the Board of Directors culpable nor complicit of any wrongdoing, but simply in its opinion that to sanction ECG would have implications on consumers. Once again, this power exercised by PRC is without any legal basis, since PRC's mandate is restricted to only regulating public utilities and not individual directors of these public utilities.
Right, and they conclude by saying that the basis for the sanctions against the Board of Directors does not fall under any of the provisions of the Companies Act, 2019, at 992, that permit allowed for sanction imposed on officers or members of the Board of Directors of a limited liability company.
Mm.
The sanction imposed against the board members of EC have no legal basis, and it's tantamount to lifting the corporate veil, which ultra-virus the powers of the PURC.
Yeah.
Following our above submission, we strongly advise that the Commission immediately withdraws the further order dated 15th April 2024, directed at the ECG and the Board of Directors, as same is null and void. It's further advised that ECG should be given the opportunity to be heard on any charges of alleged breaches of its duties and obligations following the submission of a report pursuant to PURC order dated 18th March 2024. And this is signed by the managing director of the electricity company of Ghana, Samuel Dubek Mahama.
Yeah.
And has there been any response from PURC as we speak?
No, our checks, we haven't heard anything
like that. Thank you very much, head of Energy Desk, and then member of our legal desk, Kukwasante. Thank you so much for coming through. This is the pause here on joining. So, what is the way forward? And who is saying what? Who has the legitimacy in this matter? Let me bring in lawyer Martin Pebu. Lawyer Martin Pebu is a private legal practitioner. He's been, following this development in the media space. Now, at bottom line of all of this is the provision of electricity. But this public's part, how does it resolve it? But let's understand the law and the position as it relates to the directive provided by the PURC. Mr. Martin Pebu, it's always a pleasure to have you on the pause.
My pleasure to Mr. Abrobi.
Right.
Yeah, great to be here.
So first was the initial directive by the PURC. They made some demands from the ECG. The PURC updated the public saying that the ECG failed to respond to some of them. They went further to impose sanctions on them because of the law that established them, that gives them the right to do so. The sanctions included some monetary sanctions, almost 6 million Ghana cedis. Now today, the PRC through their lawyer, the ECG board through their lawyers and the ECG through the management, they've responded saying that you have no such power whatsoever to go that line. Let's just understand what we are dealing with and who really has the power over as far as this matter is concerned, Mr. Pwebu.
Great. So, without doubt, the PRC has some powers, okay? Statutory powers as enshrined in the Act 538, right? And then the regulations. So, you see that the crust of Mr. Boafo's letter is that the administrative penalties should not have been imposed on the ECG director. Nowhere is it mentioned that the penalties can be put on the ECG directors.
Mm.
That statement is a bit too wide.
Right.
So for now, let's leave it and come to the stronger argument.
Mm.
It appears that the stronger argument is about the failure to give the directors an opportunity to respond. So that is where the real argument would be, because of the natural justice principle that before you condemn a man, you must give him a hearing.
Right.
So that one is easier, because when it comes to the matter of directors, yes, there are circumstances in which directors are held responsible. And you see in Mr. Boafo's letter, he himself refers to that section 45, where he says, offenses by body of persons, etc. So let's tackle the natural justice one and finish before we go to the areas where the waters can be muddy.
Absolutely.
The natural justice principle is straight. Yeah, that one is straight. So meaning that the directors were not heard. So if the directors weren't heard at all, to be able to determine what efforts they made in order to avert the situation, you see, then we can say that the decision will have a problem. But that notwithstanding.
But lawyer, before you make progress on the rules of natural justice in this matter, we do understand that, you know, PRC first wrote to the management, and if you like, the board, demanding certain answers from some concerns that had come in, and gave them timelines within which to respond. The PRC updated the public, telling us that this is what ECG has done, this is what we have received, we are studying this, this is going to verification, these matters have not been responded to. How does that, you know, negate the issue of natural justice if they provided timelines, updated the public on what had been responded to, and the ones that were outstanding?
Good. Yeah, so Mr. Broby, the point is that at the time ECG was responding, if the PRC intended to hold the directors personally responsible, then it means that there will be two sets of responses. The one by the ECG as a corporate entity, that's ECG as a company, and the response by the directors.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, so that it tells you that they've heard the PURC would have heard directly from the directors in their personal capacity.
Mm.
You see, because the demands were made on the corporate entity. So if you make demands on the corporate entity, even these directors can participate in giving an answer. Okay?
Mm.
And when they are giving an answer, they are giving an answer on behalf of the corporate entity.
Right.
So the corporate entity answering. But if you intend to hold them personally liable, then you separate the charges. So you say, look, this is for ECG as a corporate entity, and this is for the directors in their personal capacity. Then, at least, they would have had the opportunity to be heard.
Right.
But that's crucial. Of course, you can imagine that I am generally, until these issues were raised, I was happy that PRC was showing that, yes, it's up to the task and holding ECG accountable.
Yes.
Oh, though this letter has come to erode a bit of that force, but we are happy in terms of governance and accountability. It's a good step.
Mm.
So I won't say that PURC has lost. It doesn't matter. It's possible for PURC to look at it, backtrack, and it's very clear. So far, with this dispute, I can see that the regulations 2413, they will need amendment to make it clearer, to make it clearer how you hold directors personally responsible as distinct from the corporate entity. Yeah.
So, on that score, the directors cannot be held responsible for their actions and inactions when it comes to the how the corporate structure is supposed to be respected in the way that lawyers for the board, they've made it clear that you cannot individually sanction individuals. They were acting on, they were providing policy on behalf of a corporate entity.
Directors can be held responsible. As a matter of company law, directors can be held responsible. You see, even you provided a good example of the Muntier threat. And let's also even watch, in the history of the PURC, when this man was MD, Mr. Jamina, the PURC once held him liable. And even they recommended that he be prosecuted. Mr. Jamina, at the time, I think that was the previous administration, under the NDC administration.
Yes.
But later, issues were resolved. So, yeah. So, PURC has that history that, look, they can go after directors. But right now, what we are saying, and going after directors is sanctioned under company law. You see how you even read parts of the company companies act, right? Good. But here, the problem is that Mr. Abuafu is saying they were not given notice. You see, you didn't give the person, quote-unquote, his charges. That, look, okay, let's say Mr. Kelly Gadioko, you know, he even resigned. You failed to provide proper direction. You failed to supervise. But, you know, the directors are responsible for framing policy and ensuring that the policy is properly implemented by the company. So the MD and the staff are actually, loosely speaking, for lack of a better word, agents of the board.
Right.
Because the board is responsible, ultimately responsible. So Mr. Abuafu is saying that you, this, the board members, they were not specifically told, Mr. Kelly Gadjepo, we think that you have a case to answer personally. The other board members, mention them, Anodonpre.
Yes, Frank Anodonpre.
Who else? The lawyer.
The MD himself, yeah.
Yes. All these people, you should personally answer. Just like when you come into a court, contempt case, there's the one you can go against the company itself. Then there's the one you can go against directors. When you are going against the company, the directors will come and answer for the company. But when you are going against the directors personally, then they will respond themselves personally. So it appears the natural justice principle is quite strong. But as I've said, listen, PURC, if they are listening, they have our support. ECG has done us too much harm. You heard the unpalatable words NAPO used on us, and I'm being very charitable. A minister that we pay with taxpayers' money, he disrespected us. You want evil on Ghana, you should go and find your own timetable. When in 2016, he was making noise and spending about 60% of my income, or people are spending 60% of their income on electricity, which is not even true, etc. But because we're not happy with the JM administration, we kept lying. He can't even be polite to citizens. So we are behind PURC, except that it appears on the rules something hasn't gone right. They've done well, at least. They should look at it and perhaps see how they can mitigate, and then we'll move forward.
Right. But Mr. Pebble, just some bit of education more on this matter. So that the both lawyer Buafo and the managing director of ECG, who's also a lawyer, they come to the same conclusion that PURC has no jurisdiction in this matter and that they should even withdraw the letter. They describe it as null and void. Is it that simple?
No. It's certainly not that simple. You know, the ECG didn't do this work well. That's what led to all of this. So ECG has lost face. I even thought that their own letter would even be apologetic, would say that, look, we are raising this issue. I don't think I saw something like that. It's as if you just want to talk law. Don't forget that law too emanates from society. So sometimes society is ahead of the law. You can see that ECG has bullied us. ECG has disrespected us. They, together with the Minister for Energy, Matthew Opoku Prempeh, ECG has totally, I mean, disregarded our wishes, etc. So I would have thought that they would even have some space to say, look, all of this notwithstanding, you know, we apologize for the current hardship. The current hardship. Because these guys who are now enjoying feeding fat off our taxes, they came to office on the back of Dumso. That was one of the principal reasons. Dumso and corruption. So if today there is Dumso and citizens are complaining, when you write such a letter, it should also come with an apology. You see, you add the two. You see, when you want to communicate well with citizens, you even start with the apology. Yes, oh, we reckon people of Ghana are suffering. We should not suffer like this, blah, 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 everything. So you wet the ground. Then the message can, what, seep through. But where you just keep hitting us with law, no, it doesn't work that way. When people are emotionally charged, a lot of the time, there's no space for law. Why do you think violence happens, etc.? So, hey, I would have added the issues of an apology and assuage citizens that, look, yes, we are aware. We are trying our best. Kindly give us support. We are sorry for the inconveniences, blah, 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 blah. That's without prejudice. Then you attack the legal issues. That's how you communicate. Effective. And then you show empathy. I just don't throw the law in our faces like it's been done now.
But again, PRC, you will say that per the regulation, they are covered in terms of the sanctions that they impose. And even making the point that if this demand is not met, they may escalate it, go to court, and then seek custodial sentence for the MD and the other members of the board. Now that there is a challenge or a contention coming from the other side, would you suggest that perhaps the court must step in to resolve this matter going forward?
Well, Mr. Abebe, it's a difficult call to make. I'm thinking that if PRC steps back and seek to, you know, undo this letter, okay, and try to come up with an opportunity for the directors to respond personally, I think it will be faster. It will be more efficacious. Yes, because I can tell you that as a lawyer, you know that, yes, you know, the wheels of justice grind slowly. And so the court will take a lot longer. And even the public will lose interest in this case and move on to other things. I mean, PRC, it shouldn't be difficult for that. If you look, maybe, as I said, the regulations. But the regulations are many and very bulky. Unless there's something else, we are still reading through. But it's difficult. Even if you find that you are saying in the specific 2413, you want to specifically hold directors responsible, the larger question still is, did you give the director the accusations that answer in your personal capacity? Did you give the directors opportunity to answer? As I said, it pains me because I was very happy that PRC had done this. But you know, at that time, you see, so we were a bit emotionally charged. So the issue of natural justice to the directors didn't come up. So at you all. See what I meant by people are charged. There isn't much room for legal analysis. It pains me that.
So therefore, they miss an opportunity to have them roped in, if you like.
Yes, that one so far, because once you are asking somebody to pay this huge money, there is no way you can come to that decision without first asking the person to answer personally. That one is hard. It's hard, notwithstanding the anger we have towards ECG and especially Matthew Opoku Prempeh, that we feed him, we pay all the bills, and yet he can disrespect us like this. There's a lot of anger towards Opoku Prempeh, and I think that, look, you should be reminded that you should come and apologize, eh? You can't take 32 million people for granted. You don't insult citizens like that and think it's okay. No. He will pay dearly for it if he doesn't render an apology. You see how when Akufo-Addo came in, he started making mistakes. We advised that, look, hey, Akufo-Addo, it's clear that, look, you didn't know governance is that difficult. So maybe render a general apology. Then, generally, people will soften and they will even cooperate. He didn't listen. Today, you see, all the mistakes he accused John Mahama of making, he has made worse. Today, the word incompetent fits Akufo-Addo and Bawumia more than JM. Even corruption, common corruption. Akufo-Addo is 80. You don't have much time to live on this earth. Yet corruption is more corrupt than JM. That's even the one that beats my imagination.
Right.
You are 80 years old. What say? I come in nine, major JM, and then you end up being more corrupt.
All right.
Can you imagine?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, lawyer. For your time this afternoon, it's always a pleasure speaking to you. But let me pick the thoughts of lawyer Lamtik Apanga. I mean, counsel, you're welcome to the post. I know you are hard-pressed with time, so I'll make this very snappy. You've been listening to your colleague Martin Pebble. Is there merit in what the ECG and then the lawyer for the ECG are putting for? But first of all, the rules of national justice was breached when PURC decided to impose the fine on the board of directors without giving them a fair hearing.
Well, good afternoon, Elton. Following from what my learned friend Martin has already espoused, we need to make a clear distinction in matters involving company law. The act of the company is entirely different from the act of individuals.
Right.
And so if PRC is of the view that the directors are liable for the actions of the company. And mind you, the company does not act on its own. It acts on the directions of the directors of the company.
Yes.
They are referred to as alter ego of the company. And so where there are liabilities, sometimes can be extended to the directors.
Mm.
But what is key is that before you can impose any sanction, it is a general rule of law that you need to have given the person the right to be heard. Failure to do so can render whatever decision you have made on behalf of that person or made against that person to be set aside in a court of competent jurisdiction. And so PRCU may have erred, and I say that a bit loosely, may have erred because it's only a court that can make a determination that what PRC has done is null and void and not ECG or the directors. But we need to distinguish between the imposition or the penalties imposed against ECG as an entity,
right,
the ones against the directors as individuals. As far as PRC is concerned, letters were sent to PRC, there were responses made, and so as far as right to be heard is concerned, that has been fulfilled because PRC had had opportunity to give ECG the right to respond, and they have responded, and based on that, the sanctions were imposed.
Yes.
What is missing here is the failure to give the directors individually the right to respond to why sanctions should not be imposed on them personally for failing to act. The argument that they are not part of the day-to-day running of the company is not, for lack of a better word, the proper explanation to get them out of this, because the directors of the company take ultimate responsibility for all the actions that management undertake, because you provide the policy direction and everything that you do, the company does ends up with you. And so the directors more or less are responsible for the actions of the company.
Mm.
But the procedure that ECG, PRC followed, is what brings a lot into question. But in all this, it is the court that can make a fair determination whether or not the impositions of the sanctions on the directors is valid or otherwise.
All right. So, councillors, I've just been going through the PRC correspondence to ECG and, of course, same correspondence to the public. And I've yet to come across anywhere where they mention specific names, board members, and their response to the demands that they made of ECG. I'm yet to come across that. We'll give them a benefit of that. Maybe they have other evidence that they may want to provide. Nevertheless, now that the rules of national justice was breached, according to ECG and their lawyers, does this nullify everything that has been set in motion, that the ECG will now have the power to say that withdraw everything you have said because you failed to do your work?
It does not. We should bear in mind that the PRC has been established for the benefit of UNI. So if there's an error in the procedure, perhaps PRC can decide to withdraw now and provide an opportunity for them to be heard. It is not entirely lost. Just that it erodes the authority of PRC and it creates a situation as if PRC has not gained the attention and the support that it requires from the public. Mm. And so it is not entirely lost. PRC can decide to write to them withdrawing the sanctions that have been imposed and now serve them with notice that we intend to impose these penalties on you personally and that we demand an answer within this number of days. And if failure to do so, we'll take it as though you have waived the right to be heard and go ahead and impose the sanctions.
And until that is done, we may have to stand still.
Until that is done, the individual directors cannot be held liable under the circumstances that we find ourselves. However, ECG as an entity can be held liable because ECG is under the regulations of PRC. And ECG has had opportunity to be heard. It has been served with notice. It has also been penalties have been imposed on ECG. And so ECG can be held. But you see, let's come back to the issues. What is crucial here is not all this legal battle.
Absolutely.
What is crucial is how you and I can have power.
Absolutely. Bottom line. Bottom line.
Continue working. So that's the most important. We are not interested in who is winning and who is losing. We're interested in having power flow. And you can tell clearly that it is a tough war between PRC.
It looks like connection to Council Apanga has frozen. Yes, please go on.
ECG that appears to have the backing of the minister is behaving as if a child that is under their father and PRC who has no mother under.
Right, again.
They are putting the rest of us in a very uncomfortable situation. Very, very uncomfortable in the sense that here we are not having regular power supply. We don't even have a time to regulate how, when power will flow so that at least you can manage your affairs knowing when power is available and when power is not available. Mm. And several requests for timetable in order for us to manage our affairs have been turned down and sometimes very arrogant manner as we have seen from what the minister has said in the past. Mm. Clearly, it tells us the lack of leadership, the quality leadership that we were promised by this government has entirely been completely been abandoned. We subjected John Mahama and his peers to strict leadership demands. And then when it's your turn to deliver, you are now asking the public that we should serve you with our own timetable. We should go to PRC and bring our own timetable. That, I think, is a very horrible comments from the Minister for Energy, and we should be condemned in all manner of terms that we can.
So, Council, before I let you go, I mean, whilst they deal with this legal issues at the very top, would you suggest, I mean, me personally, I just want to understand what is going on so that when I leave the office and I'm going home, I should be assured whether I will have electricity or not. If there's going to be any electricity, then I plan my life accordingly. Now, as it is happening, every morning my light goes off. I don't know where, I'm unable to tell when it will come back. I'm living in a state of confusion. Yes, the people who are supposed to regulate and provide me power, they are having this public spat. Do you suggest that perhaps a stronger hand must step in to resolve this matter once and for all? Because bottom line, I need electricity.
I will say that for the benefit of us, the public, who need power to run our day-to-day activities, we need to ensure that power supply is consistent, and even if this is not consistent, we have a timetable that helps us to manage our affairs. So I would suggest that we should put aside all this legal battle and call for a meeting, a collaboration between PRC, ECG, and all the stakeholders involved so that they can work together in harmony. At the end of the day, when they work in harmony, we will stand to benefit. So if the president can make an intervention, I'm calling on the president, Akufo-Addo, to call the entities together, bring all the leaders and the stakeholders together, and see how we can fine-tune their activities for the benefit of all of us. They may want to go to court to test the law on this issue.
Right.
But while the thing pends in court, we need power to work. We need power to run the economy. It's costing us so much if we don't have power. And so it is not in the interest of anyone to see the entities at war and the rest of us suffer. And so I call on the president that he should quickly set in a committee of eminent persons that can come together, bring these entities together, and they put aside all the egos and the personal issues so that we can have the matters resolved. Whether the directors pay the penalty or not, we need power to flow. We need power to do our work. And we need a timetable to know when the power will be available or when power will not be available.
All right. Thank you very much, Councilor. And I wish you a very nice weekend. And I pray that you have electricity to enjoy your weekend. Right. So that's Private Legal Practitioner Apanga on this matter. Now, we will stay a little longer on electricity because government has commenced negotiation with private entities to take over bill calculation and debt collection for the Electricity Company of Ghana, EC Yameze Energy Crisis. The move comes as authorities strive to prevent collapse of the energy sector and maintain the cash flow system, given that over 30% of energy losses are attributed to non-collection of debt and power theft. Michael Ashale has more from our thought leadership discussion on guaranteeing reliable power supply in the country.
All 8 guests unanimously agree that the primary challenges contributing to the country's unstable energy situation were revenue mobilization and difficulties in procuring and distributing fuel efficiently.
Energy sector faced 2 main challenges arising from forces external to the sector. And these were, 1, lack of inadequate and secure quantities of reasonably priced fuel for power generation, and the lack of adequate public funds to finance the sector's investments requirements.
We need to take another look at the financing.
I don't have a problem.
I don't think we'd be very prudent with the financing of ECG.
Okay.
There have been instances where monies have been diverted for other purposes. And so we need to critically look at how we are managing ECG financing like a chop bar type of accounting.
But the overarching challenge there is finance. And finance is in 2 sides. There's finance to run and there's finance to earn. I would have liked a situation where we are today with all the institutions. Let's do an audit on all of them.
Even the former Deputy Energy Minister, Andrew Ejiapomesa, agrees with them.
Truth be told, we've had some maintenance issues, some of which have been resolved. Some of it is ongoing. And we have some challenges with fuel, which on a daily basis, depending on what is available, then determines. However,
he maintains that the primary issue lies in fuel procurement, attributing the erratic power problem to the ECG, which is currently grappling with overloaded transformers.
So the fuel being expensive is true, but I still don't see where that personal interest arises. Mm. The outages numbers, right? 85% of it is ECG problem.
Okay.
It's not grid code. Mm. It's not the generation problem. That's only about 15%. The data that I've seen. So you see clearly that if you are relying on ECG system for a certain kind of industry that requires power 24 hours, tendency for you to want to go, especially if you are a bulk consumer, to go directly to get from the generator is high.
Ranking member on the Mines and Energy Committee, John Jinapo, strongly believes that if the current situation persists, the energy sector is headed towards collapse.
IPP is a little over 1 billion. Related expenditure, almost 800 million. So today, if you were to flush out the energy sector debts and bring the books to a healthy path, you will need about $1.8 billion in order to deal with energy sector related debts. And so the bills are compounding and it's threatening the sector. Look, my worry is that if we continue on this trajectory, in 1 year time, the sector will collapse.
Michael Nyantichi, General Secretary of the Public Utilities Workers Union, contends that over the past few years, the ECG has made efforts to enhance its revenue collection. However, he alleges that both the VRA and Greco have collaborated to lure away some of their major dependable customers who typically pay for their electricity they use, thus disrupting their revenue targets.
ECG puts in a lot of effort, and everybody who wants to be objective can attest that for the past almost 2 years, the effort has been made to enhance the revenue. Then there are also this subtle thing being played out between Gridco and VRA, where because of the some loophole in the law, some key customers of ECG are being poached. And these were customers who could pay easily and contribute towards the cash waterfall. But ECG is losing these customers. Gridco, together with VRA, is giving them some form of rebates. My head, I remember the B5, and then also some time ago, some of the mines were also taken away.
Okay.
I think there was one steel plant, which is also more or less being targeted.
Some of the problem, according to the former commissioner of PURC, Dr. Ni Daku Kobina Asante, is due to power theft, which he says is a major problem.
There are private entities who are not paying ECG for power they are consuming. But the second one is theft. Some people are bypassing meters. Some people don't even have meters, whether they are fake meters or whatever. So some people are consuming power, and ECG is not even billing them for that power. And we need to depoliticize the whole energy space, hold the regulators accountable, let them do their work. If they don't do it, hold them accountable. And especially the leaders of the distribution companies, ECG, Gridco, if they fail, they need to be fired.
Andrew Ejepa Mercer disclosed that the government is in talks with some private players to enhance revenue, with a primary focus on billing and debt collection.
And these are conversations that we're having in respect of the privatization or some private sector participation in the billing and collection. Discussions are far advanced. Of course, typically you have the resistance from our friends in ECG. But it's something that I believe will help they themselves. Okay? And so we've tasked them to put in boundary meters as a first step that they are working on. Of course, their digitalization program that they're rolling out to is also helping with the collections. Okay? So when they are able to put the boundary meters in all their operational districts and know the volume of power that is going in every district, then you can introduce private sector people to bill and collect for the power that is coming into that enclave. So it's work that is ongoing.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that in the fullness of time, would because 30% losses
is high.
Definitely not sustainable.
It's high.
However, many of the panelists expressed opposition to the full privatization of ECG and other state-run entities in the energy sector.
I challenge you
to
show me one instance where this type of privatization has worked in this country.
So we can give them some minority stake in that bit, but not to get them into the entire ECG to the extent that they sit on the board of that.
I don't agree, because I see we are capable. Look, you know, it's a monopolistic area.
We have to make sure that we don't, in our haste to try and privatize, have a situation where these losses are just continued. So it's not that simple, but at the end of the day, we have to make sure that both ECG and NETCO reduce both collection losses and distribution losses, which is including theft.
Even Chair of the Mines and Energy Committee in Parliament, Samuel Atachia, is of the firm belief that full privatization is not the way to go.
I can see that as a very powerful option in the future. But in the meantime, I agree with Rankin that something should be done about a collection of revenues by ECG. In the energy space, we shouldn't run it like an ambulance. We should not only think in emergencies. You should think long run.
Meanwhile, independent power producers who are owed more than $1 billion express readiness to sign the debt restructuring agreement with the government despite apparent delays from the government side.
Going forward too, there is still an accumulation going. That is also another matter. So it's still in the region of $1 billion.
In the region of $1 billion.
Yes.
Okay. Now last year, whilst this whole discussion came up, ECG promised to remain current. Are they still current with their payment?
Yeah, they are doing their bit as we speak.
There was a banter between the ranking and the chair about what the president put out in terms of some sort of negotiation with you, the IPPs. What's the status of that?
The fact is we have had a series of engagements. By the end of every engagement, there's supposed to be a concluding point to make this document useful. And to call it a conclusive arrangement, we need to sign off. Until it is signed off, we cannot say that we have reached there. But let me confirm that we have very peaceful engagements on the issues concerned.
Okay. So almost sort of, there's been a verbal agreement between the two parties.
Impliedly.
Okay.
But what is stopping the signing?
Okay.
That I cannot tell because...
You're the CEO of the chamber.
What I mean is, on our part, we are ready to sign off.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Ultimately, the participants agree that the nation must begin diversifying its energy mix, including transitioning to renewable sources such as solar and nuclear power plants.
Now, we have not as a country prioritized our renewables. Mm. And we've not made enough effort to attract investments into renewable technology. But for a poor country like Ghana, That is where we should be looking.
They are not poor.
We have abundant silica sand in the western region. From Atuabo all the way to Aboso area. Silica sand, plenty.
There needs to be a policy where we indicate from a certain time T, any new building that is built in this country should have a solar panel. Any new building. And those that are old buildings, we find a way to also put solar on them. Within 10 years... we would have solarized this country.
Now, nuclear is a way to go. No dispute about it. And we should think long term. Mm. We shouldn't run an ambulance. Number two, the hydro, we've not finished with it yet. So it's very right. As you look at our river bodies, instead of this kind of, pollution of our water bodies, we should see what we'll get out of it.
So that's why we focus, and I agree with you. We need to focus and accelerate our nuclear penetration because it's clean, it's safe. Of course, when something goes wrong, it's terrible.
But it's internationally...
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. It's part of our energy mix that we've developed under our energy transition framework.
And this was from our thought leadership series on the energy sector yesterday. This is A Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. We will take a short break and return with more from the Nungwa Traditional Council. We are back on the show. We have a lot more to discuss with you this afternoon. The 15-year-old girl at the center of the controversial Gbogbu traditional rice, Na Yomo Ayemwade, has been released from state guardianship. Some residents of Nungwa poured onto the street to celebrate the release of the 15-year-old girl, who they say is their queen. Marcel Agbagba and Kenneth Jesse, they've been following this report, and they've come to with this report.
Busy day here on the streets of Nungwa with a lot of people going about their normal duties. Well, yesterday, many of them poured onto the streets to celebrate and jubilate over the release of Na Yomo Ayemwade from protective state custody. Some of them, days ago, masked up at the Coconut Grove Hotel demanding her release. Yesterday, there was a press conference at the Ministry of Information where the Minister for Chieftaincy and Religious Affairs, Samuel Asamoah Boateng, addressed the press.
She wasn't married to the Bogu Ulame. It's a ritual which she has been initiated into it at age 6. And so she was focused on it. All they did was to elevate her status to a queen mother of that deity. So there was no marriage.
Gender Minister Designate Nakua Newman said Nakromo will be released to her family by the close of today, the 18th of April 2024, after the family was made to sign a bond.
I would like you all to know that the medical assessment on the child, it indicates that she's not pregnant and she has no immediate health concerns. Now Okromo's date of birth, from records at her creche and her primary schools she attended, indicates that she's 15 years old and she was born on the 18th of July, 2008. The child will continue to pursue her education, and the Attorney General has issued an interim report which is dated 18th April, 2024 and has advised that in the best interest of the child and in accordance with Section 2 and 5 of the Children's Act, the child should be released to her parents pending their complete review of the docket. Thus, the child will be reunited with her family today, 18th April, 2024, after the parents have signed a bond.
Your Deputy Attorney General, Alfred Tuayabua, says the Attorney General's office is still reviewing the docket of this case and no conclusion has been reached yet.
Marriage or not, we have not come to any conclusion on that issue yet. So the officers in the ministry are reviewing the docket, and when we come to any conclusion on that issue, it will be made known to the public.
Today at the temple of the Bobu-Wulomo, we were stationed there for some hours. It was busy with a lot of elders moving into the compound and also stepping out. We were told the Bobu-Wulomo himself was at his temple where he was having discussions with some of the elders of the community. All of them are tight-lipped and will not speak to us. For some of the residents who've been interacting with, who wouldn't want to speak on camera, they told us that they are excited that now Yomua Yemwade has been released from protective state custody, and they believe that that would allow tradition to continue.
So that's Marcela Gbagba from Nungwa. Now, remember, there are so many issues happening in Parliament now. The Speaker, before the suspension of the House, indefinitely refused to allow the House to consider the ministerial nominees, citing a legal challenge to that particular process. Now, remember that the court took a decision on it and then, you know, dismissed that particular, you know, legal challenge to the approval of the ministers of state. Now, today, the majority leadership in Parliament, led by Alexander Afanyomarkin, the majority leader, they've been responding to these matters. They've been responding to general governance issues and other matters relating to the MPP and the MPP government. We can listen into this news conference and update on Parliament and the ways to resolve these ministers who are still holding out.
The NDC has not changed since 2016, when they lost the elections by over 1 million votes. The only thing that has changed is their running mate. Even so, the running mate was part of the government and she was a main advisor on educational policy who advised the government on educational policy to the effect that free SHS was not possible. So it's the same old team, from the flag bearer through to the running mate and all their former ministers, some in parliament, some outside parliament, their communicators who still find space in the media, criticizing our government and promising a new heaven. It is important for us to remind all of us that these same people, whilst in office, made certain profound statements as to what they could do and what they could not do. We need to emphasize that they were clear on their minds that vulnerable people who could benefit from free SHS was indeed impossible. They were loud and clear on that. They even initiated what they call the E-block system, that they were going to increase infrastructure. It is important to point out that when MPP assumed office in 2017, without delay, the free SHS policy was implemented. Just for the records. Just for the records. Upon successful implementation of this free SHS, we have had an enrollment increasing by 75%. In terms of numbers, we have had 800,000 plus getting access from the beginning up to 1.4 million now. So just for emphasis, currently we have almost 1.4 million of Ghanaian children in school. Majority of them are from vulnerable homes, from homes that could not have afforded if it was to be a fee-paying policy. In terms of infrastructure, across the country, this government has so far completed, as of December last year, completed 747 structures, dormitories, classroom blocks, to support the implementation of this policy. And we are not saying that it's been done without challenges. We have challenges, but largely, we have been successful in implementing. Now, they left us with some day schools. I have with me the records. We have a total of 60 out of the 101 community day schools, called the E-blocks, that have been completed. We need to emphasize that as at the time we assumed office, they who were the initiators of this initiative had completed only 29. This government believes in continuity. We didn't come with our own policy just to abandon what our predecessor had initiated. We did not do that. So far, we have successfully completed, as of 2022, 31 more. So making it a total of 60 day schools that are in operation. The rest have been reassessed, and I can say on authority that 15 of these e-blocks have been programmed, earmarked for resumption of work. And this is going on. So if an NDC activist sits on radio to tell you that this government has failed Ghanaians, it is important that you remind such an NDC activist with the records, because facts are sacred. You can't change them. That you let them know that you had an opportunity for 8 years. You said that you were totally against free SHS because the resources to implement was not there. But we came. And let me state again that between 2017 and 2019, we implemented several tax reforms. We reduced some taxes, and I'm going to provide you with a list of them. NPP administration reviewed the tax policy it inherited. For instance, the following were abolished. The 1% special levy on import was abolished. The 17% VAT on financial services was abolished. The 17% on selected imported medicines that were already in place was also abolished. And in this case, let me say that those who were producing, the pharmaceutical companies that were doing local production, were given that dispensation to enable them to make savings. I'm saying that all of these were done. It was a cost to government, because abolishing taxes or reducing percentage in terms of tax that you have inherited would mean less money to you as a government, less revenue. Whilst doing this, we implemented free SHS. So it should tell you that this is a government that cares, this is a government that believes in value for money and knows how to allocate resources for the benefit of the vulnerable. So an opposition propaganda should not mislead Ghanaians that they are better managers of this economy and, for that matter, the educational sector. When you come to the educational sector, which is a major aspect of our economy, because educating the people of Ghana, educating the youth, building the human resource capacity is a major investment. And that is how come today Ghana has produced more nurses to the extent that we are able to even export that subsector of labor into other countries. Now, let me touch on a very sensitive issue about electricity. Ladies and gentlemen, we recall that somewhere 2015, when Ghanaians were calling for reduction in utility tariffs, particularly electricity, the then President Mahama, currently the flag bearer of the NDC, said the cost of the production of electricity was so high that there was no way the government could reduce electricity tariffs. The NDC was loud and clear. In 2017, when we assumed office, this government, the MPP government that today the NDC criticizes, took steps to negotiate a major tariff reduction. Households enjoyed between 17 to 20% reduction. Corporates enjoyed reduction up to 25%. The mining companies benefited, and the records are there that upon assumption of office, the very thing we spoke about in opposition, which our friends in government then said it was a political talk, we came in and we announced these major tariff reductions. And it is important to remind all of us that between 2013 and 2016, we had an average annual increase in terms of electricity tariffs of up to 41.3%. Whereas between 2017 and 2023, the average annual increase in electricity tariff was 9.2%. So yes, it is true that Ghanaians are complaining of electricity tariffs. Cost of living is high. But what we want to emphasize is that it was worse under NDC. And if they were in power, given their posture in government at the time, the situation would have been worse than it is. So, comparatively, this is not a party to be trusted. From its flag bearer to all its operatives, they were the same old stack. Like I've said before, the appointor and his appointees haven't changed. And as at now, all they do is to criticize and to mislead Ghanaians with a view of getting power. They have not put in place alternatives to say that, look, this is what we left behind. This is what we expect the MPP to do. MPP hasn't done it. We can do it better. As we speak, the NDC has not put out an alternative in terms of policy. So again, we want to emphasize that in spite of all the challenges that the good people of Ghana face, we have not left them naked. We walked the talk. We implemented the rebate on electricity tariffs, and we have been very conscious of upward adjustment. And not to forget the fact that in 2020, during the COVID, we ensured that lifeline consumers had free electricity, yeah, and we had up to 50% reduction for others during the COVID. Over the period, this government has been conscious in seeing to it that Ghanaians do not suffer the way they did under the NDC government when it comes to payment of electricity tariffs. Now, let me turn my attention to health. If you come to the health sector, I'll start from our region. We have completed 10 polyclinics in Central Region, 5 polyclinics in Greater Accra. We have done the rehabilitation of Tamale Teaching Hospital Phase 2. The Bekwai Regional Hospital has been completed. The UGMC Phase 2 done. We have done 13 district hospitals in addition. And we have the 6 drone delivery centers. Let me emphasize this. Distribution of medication to rural communities. There was a whole inertia about this during the NDC regime, where it would take days to deliver medication through digitalization, through innovation. This government has demonstrated its care, its love for the people in vulnerable communities. Yeah. And we instituted this drone delivery service. And so far we have these 6 centers and it is functioning. Those in very rural communities where it is difficult to access healthcare can attest to that.
And for the majority caucus in parliament, let's move to the MPP flag bearer, Dr. Mamadou Bawumia, who says 2 hostels built to accommodate head porters, popularly known as Kayaye, already will be commissioned on the 4th of May. Speaking during a visit to the Medina market after a fire outbreak destroyed some stalls there, he assured the market women government will reconstruct some of the structure. He also presented an amount of 20,000 Ghana cedis to them. Prior to the 2016 general election, the then candidate Nana Akufo-Addo promised to build hostel facilities for the Kayaye to afford them decent accommodation here in the capital, Accra.
Enchebia ena yema masuti se BBAC wo Medina market se eja atoha ena asay stores bibri miti eno na menianje.
I heard of the damage that Medina fire outbreak has caused to the traders. I was saddened by the incident.
President Nana Akufo-Addo na buying yebeba ena yebebo amo. Yemame tisa asemi.
So President Akufo-Addo's government is here to pay our solidarity. We have come here with our contractors and consultants to survey the quantity, the extent of the damage.
Omubeye ne consultants, omubeye estimates no. No mo Dubai, I almost say, I mo betimi si stores fufro amamo. And I may say, before I me bahano, me pese designs no aye ready, and a contractor no so aye ready.
By the time I leave here, the contractor will come because the designs are ready and work will commence immediately.
Minu yanum kaye fuoso.
Not forgetting our promise to our Kayayes to build hostels in which they can live and learn various trades. 2 of the hostels are ready and will be commissioned on the 4th of May.
But say say ye we hostels me no Bakuwa Medina Bakuwa Ashaiman. Enchebia 4th of May. Ye be BS our hostels no amakaya ye for no mua koktenamo na omua sia n san y juma.
Some other stories now. The Ministry of Roads has intensified the pace of construction of some roads in the Joso constituency as a parliamentary by-election draws near. Contractors have doubled up activities on the road, some of which were already under construction. Some constituents who are surprised at the speed of work say their minds are made up. Going to the polls, Nanaya Ojima visited the constituencies to gauge the mood of the electorates ahead of the parliamentary primaries.
Caterpillars and other earth-moving equipment have been deployed on the Onye Kontinasi Road. On March 28, many mourners, including government functionaries, used this road, which was riddled with potholes, to attend the one-week ride of the late MP for Ejoso, John Kuma. But the road is currently undergoing massive transformation. Minister for Roads and Highways, Francis Asensubwache, addressed NPP supporters at Ejoso.
Contractors are here, you know, contractors are kese.
All the contractors working in Ejoso are established ones. One of the best contractors in the country is Kofi Joe. He's the one working on the Onye stretch. The work being done here is amazing. On the Dunyina Road, Luma is seriously fixing the road.
LJP, SSO, Air Trust, so Honum. Atashi, a chalkroom, or Yajmo, one of the best contractors.
According to the minister, 247 kilometers of the road projects are being undertaken in the area. 73 kilometers of the roads are under highways, 83 kilometers under feeder roads, and urban roads have 93 kilometers. In setting the records straight, the NPP government says it is solely responsible for the projects. Kofi Ampo for Japan is constituency chair of the NPP.
Someone is taking credit for the roads being done in the area. If that was true, the individual would have been named here. If you want power, just be truthful.
Meanwhile, some electorate in the Ejoso constituency say the intensity of work on the roads is election related. Respondents, however, say this will not influence their decision at the polls.
The roads are being done for our votes. This happens whenever there is an election. Sometimes they abandon the road after the election. The roads are for political reasons. They can pack out after the election. I am bent on bringing back the former MP, Owusu Ejiomi. It is good they are building the roads, but they should also give us money. We want them to give us jobs. We are strong enough, but we do not have any jobs.
Joy News checks at Kumau, where a by-election was recently held, has revealed road construction in the area have slowed down. The roads were started days before the by-election. For Joy News, Nana Aljima reporting.
And to health now, Embliss GVS, a global pharmaceutical company in Ghana, has donated anti-malaria and other essential medicines to the Cape Coast teaching hospitals. The donation is part of a global movement to create awareness and foster actions to prevent malaria that continues to claim millions of lives globally. There's more in this report.
Malaria has become a global health threat that claims the lives of millions each year. In Ghana alone, malaria remains a leading cause of illness and death, particularly among vulnerable populations in rural areas. Despite concerted effort by health authorities to combat the disease, including the distribution of insecticide-treated bed nets and access to anti-malaria medications, many families continue to grapple with its devastating impact. The medicines donated by Bliss GVS, a global pharmaceutical company in Ghana, are worth 200,000 Ghana cedis. The company says this is in support of the fight against malaria. Rosmonche is a medical representative of Bliss GVS Ghana.
You know, malaria plagues millions around the world, causing a lot of death among the inhabitants of Ghana. Some of the medicines are Lonat DS, Gisunate, Gasset 125, Gasset 250, Sanforos, Imazole, and then Frex Lozenges to the Cocos Teaching Hospital. So it is part of our corporate social responsibility to the country. As we embark on our campaign, Act for Africa, a malaria-free continent. So it's not going to stop today. We are going to do it every and each and any other year, because I think this is the fourth consecutive year as we donated this kind of medicines to Ghana hospitals, some of the Ghana hospitals. So we are hoping that this donated medicines will reach those who are in need, and that access to treatment against malaria would be very easy for those who are in need, and then we'll be able to help fight against malaria in our country as a whole.
The toll of malaria extends beyond physical suffering, affecting every aspect of family life. Vice Chair of the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana Central Region, Dr. Kwabena Nimako, commended the organization for supporting the fight against malaria.
But they are helping to control this most dangerous disease in the world, that's malaria. And I think this laudable, and what they are doing, we need to encourage them, because a lot of companies also want to do these things. But I think GVS Bliss have taken the lead and is doing a great thing. And we are appealing to all other pharmaceutical companies also to come on board and help. And at the same time, we are appealing also to the government to help in the import duties, so that at the end of the day, these such donations will continue, and each and everyone will benefit from such a donation.
Chief Executive Officer of the Cape Coast Teaching Hospital, Dr. Eric Kofinjedu, says that gesture would be properly utilized to the benefit of the vulnerable population.
Okay, I would like to take this opportunity to, on behalf of the management, the board, and our clients, thank Bliss GVS very much for this wonderful gesture. Like I said previously, as a teaching hospital, one of the things that we do best is to go to the communities to render specialist services. This will call specialist outreach programs. Last time we did was to KEA, where we saw over 5,000 patients. Many of the instances when we have screened them for malaria and they are positive, it becomes very difficult for us to get the necessary treatment to them. We fall on this type of donations to be able to deliver the type of treatment that they require. So I would like to assure you that this donation will be put to good use and the impact will be very great. Once again, we'd like to appeal to all companies in Ghana to mimic this example by Bliss GVS and support our healthcare delivery systems in Ghana and support the Ghana's roadmap to universal health coverage.
Through collective action and unwavering determination, the company believes that one day, malaria will be nothing more than a distant memory. Reporting for Joy News, Richard Kwejenyako.
Now let's talk about media and media practice, because Acting Vice Chancellor of the University of Media, Arts and Communication, UNIMAC, Eric Opoku-Mensah, has urged fresh graduates to distinguish themselves in a rapidly changing media landscape. Professor Opoku-Mensah made a call during the university's second graduation ceremony, where 70% of the total graduates were females. Here's Stephanie Bimpon's report read to you.
The second congregation of the University of Media, Arts and Communication, UNIMAC, witnessed the conferral of various certificates upon 1,303 graduates. Among them were 919 women. Acting Vice Chancellor of the University, Professor Eric Opoku, called for enhanced affirmative action in education, stressing women's pivotal roles in national human resource capacity.
Today's ceremony will see us graduate a total of 1,305 graduates, with 384 males and 900 19 females. Proud Chair, our female graduates today represents a total of 70.5% out of the total number of graduates. I dare say that no public university in Ghana or even many other countries has achieved higher marks in affirmative action than we have. So indeed, we are heralding a new dawn of equity and transformation of the media arts and communication industry in Ghana.
The Vice Chancellor further charged the graduates to distinguish themselves in the rapidly changing media landscape and ensure they remain the source of the news and not the news itself.
As we embark on the next chapter of your lives, remember that your education at UNIMAC has equipped you not only with technical expertise, but also with the values of integrity, empathy, and social responsibility. Use your voice, your talents, and your skills to advocate for positive change, to amplify diverse voices, and to foster dialogue and understanding. My dear graduates, I urge you all to become the source of the news and not the news itself.
In a speech read on his behalf, Minister of Education, Dr. Yawase Duchum, commended UNIMAC for recognizing the paramount importance of equipping the youth with essential skills and knowledge in today's rapidly evolving global landscape. He also highlighted the government's resolute dedication to enhancing TVET and STEM education in Ghana.
The government's steadfast commitment to enhancing TVET and STEM education underscores the importance of equipping our youth with the skill and knowledge needed.
When we made our McDonald's Spicy Chicken McNuggets, you were praise hands emoji. Then we ran out and you were streaming tears emoji. Now they're back, so you can be grinning face with sweat emoji. Order ahead on the McDonald's app.
And get money mouth face emoji with two orders of crispy, irresistible 10-piece McNuggets, spicy or classic, for just $6. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. To thrive in a rapidly evolving global landscape, UNIMAC, with its innovative programs and dedication to excellence, stand as a beacon of opportunity and empowerment in this crucial field.
Some graduates believe the transformative lessons acquired at the prestigious university will pave way for numerous opportunities.
I think people, our friends and citizens in the political space should be very sincere with what they communicate to the electorates, especially the media as well. We should be very precise. We should double check our facts before we put them out, because it's a very critical time for us as a people because of elections.
In a community like UNIMAC, we have a lot of opportunities. Our lecturers are there for us. Our fellow students are there for us as well. So it has not been easy, but it has been worth it, looking at what happened today.
This institution has transformed me and, of course, my class, because coming in here, there was so much expectation, and I think I have achieved that.
The university, however, focused on integrating TVET principles into its curriculum to equip the youth with essential skills and knowledge, nurturing creativity. Stephanie Bimpong's report, read to you.
Let me take you outside the borders of Ghana, because German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has just returned from a trip to China that lasted 3 days, an unusually long visit, in other words, that points to the importance Germany attaches to the relationship with China. So what did Scholz achieve? DW correspondent Hans Brandt in Berlin can tell us more. Germany, Brandt, has been worried about being over-dependent on Chinese goods and the Chinese market, but it also wants to keep doing business there. The Scholz find a new balance in this regard.
Key
key words here are the so-called de-risking and decoupling. Germany wants to de-risk its relationship with China, in other words, to make sure that it does not enter too many risks in dependency on Chinese goods and Chinese production. At the same time, it wants to do everything to avoid decoupling, in other words, cutting ties to China. And trying to find this balance is the problem. There was a large business delegation accompanying Chancellor Scholz on his visit, and their interest clearly is to continue investing in China. They have been doing so at record levels for the past year or so. But they are also worried about China flooding the European and global market with subsidized goods such as electric vehicles and solar panels, which they feel is an imbalance in competition, in international competition. In the end, they got very few assurances from China on these matters. There was a lot of pomp and ceremony, a lot of welcoming of Scholz and so on, a lot of time invested, but the only concrete agreement that was signed was one that concerned the export of German apples to China.
What about the global politics? Scholz was in China just as Iran attacked Israel. Did that overshadow the trip at all?
It was to some extent expected. There seems to have been some prior knowledge about the Iranian attack, when they would be attacking, and basically Scholz stuck to his program in China, took a little bit of time off to deal with diplomatic fallout with this consultations with G7 nations and that sort of thing. And of course, China does have some influence in the region, especially Iran, and also to some extent on some Arab states. And China shared the call for avoiding escalation in that conflict, obviously supported the United Nations Security Council on that score. But in the end, China does not want to invest very much political capital in that. It sees that as a regional conflict, which is a problem of the West and of the Western ally Israel. And it expects basically the West to solve the problem and not to get involved.
Also, I do know that China has close ties to Russia. Germany has said it hopes China can contribute to ending the war in Ukraine. Did Scholz get any assurance on that issue from his Chinese counterparts?
That was probably the second most important goal of the Scholz visit, to try and get China involved in a peace process concerning Ukraine. Last time Scholz had been in China was at the end of 2022, and at that time he and Xi jointly called for, warned against the use of nuclear weapons by Russia in that conflict, and that was seen by Germany as a success of Scholz diplomacy, as it were. This time round, there was nothing of the sort. There's going to be a peace conference about Ukraine in Switzerland in the summer, and Scholz did not manage to get the Chinese to agree to attend that. The Chinese simply said peace is a good idea. But in the end, China and Russia have an important relationship, which also concerns things such as dual-use goods, things like microchips that China exports to Russia that can also have a military use, not just a civilian use, and Scholz had no assurance from China that that kind of export would end. So in the end, there was a lot of handshaking, a lot of friendly faces, but very little of substance that came out of this trip.
Right, correspondent Brian, thank you very much from our partners, the DWTV in Germany. Well, that's our show for today. For more stories, log on to our website, mindjoyonline.com. Stories: running truck driver who calls train as in jailed 6 months after pleading guilty to 3 counts of inappropriate driving. OSP files additional charges against the former PPA CEO, Ajay Nimbwatem. Ajay, my name is Elton Brobe. You have a wonderful weekend. Hopefully Monday we'll meet to bring another exciting edition of The Pulse. Until then, have a good evening and take care.